Grace to you and peace from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, I'm pretty sure if you've been around a while, you've heard me talk about my first job ever. I was a newspaper delivery expert for the Sacramento Bee. You may have heard of it. It was a local daily publication. I had no idea then that someday I would be paid to deliver the good news of the gospel when I was delivering the paper, not so good news, every day. Now, I'm not so sure the hours are any better for this gig than they were for that gig, but the benefits are definitely, definitely better. Yeah, the early service didn't get that either. Anyway, thanks. Thanks for all that. Thanks, Kim. I appreciate it. Anyway, there were a lot of things not to like about being a newspaper carrier. A lot of things not to like. One thing that was not very good was having to get up early every morning. You see, we were supposed to have the paper delivered by 6 a.m. 7 days a week. 7 days. For those of you counting, that's no days off. And not only was it early, but weekends like this, early in the morning, it was dark, and it was cold, and it was wet. And for some newspaper carriers, that meant that their parents would actually drive them on their paper route, but not me and my brothers. My dad would drive us maybe on Christmas morning, and if we were lucky, on our birthday. The whole thing about when he delivered the paper in San Francisco, yada, yada, yada. So we would ride our bikes in the cold, wet, dark streets of Elk Grove. But even that wasn't the worst part about being a paper boy. The absolute worst part about being a paper boy was collecting. So how it worked back in the 80s, and Pastor Bruce, I know, knows this, having been a newspaper person himself. Back in the 80s, it was legal at the time. I don't know if it'd be legal today. They sold the papers to us kids, and then we would sell them to the people we were delivering to. So we had to pay for the papers that the bee delivered to us, and then we had to collect money to pay for those papers from the people that we got to bring them to every morning by 6 a.m. And I can tell you, that was not a lot of fun. And sending out, you know, teenagers, early teenagers, out to try and shake people down for a little bit of money, not good. I think when I started delivering the paper, it was maybe $5.50 or $6 a month, and it had gone up to $8 or maybe $8.25 by the time I retired. So what would happen is I'd go out in the evening when people were home from work, and hopefully when they were having dinner, because then they were actually home, and I'd ring the bell and they'd open the door, or maybe not open the door. A lot of times they pretended like they weren't home or too busy. But if they opened the door, I'd say, I'm here collecting for the bee. And I would get a number of different responses. One would be, oh, could you come back? We're in the middle of dinner. I'm like, yeah, that's why I'm here. The other would be, oh, I don't have any money right now. Can you come back? I'm like, I got nothing better to do than ride my bike around in the evening just trying to collect a few dollars. The other would be, oh, well, the person who actually gets the paper isn't here right now, so you'll have to come back. Or they would take their time, go find their checkbook, and write me a check for the exact amount. But at least then I didn't have to go back. Or they would write me a check for an amount just over what was due, maybe 50 cents, or if I was really lucky, a dollar more than they owed me. Or they would hand me cash, and if it was $5.50 I was collecting, and they handed me $6, they would put their hand out for the change. Absolutely brutal. It would make me so mad that they would go to a restaurant, somebody would bring them a meal once, and they would tip that person. I brought the paper every day, 7 days a week, by 6 a.m., and they stiffed me on the tip more times than not. All that to say, I can kind of relate to the slaves or the servants in the story being sent to collect for the vineyard owner. Not exactly. Okay, obviously I wasn't killed. And I wasn't even beat up. But I did not always receive a very warm welcome when I went to the door collecting for the bee. And there's probably somebody out there who still owes me. But don't worry, the bee got theirs. They always were paid in full. This is a challenging parable about wicked tenants who don't pay up. It's the last of the parables that are told by Jesus in Mark's gospel, and the only parable that is told, or major parable, that's told outside of the fourth chapter of Mark. Now, if you've been paying attention, you might notice that we're reading from Mark chapter 12 this morning, and last week we read from the 10th chapter, so we skipped right over the 11th chapter of Mark. That's because it tells the story of Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, and it's not Palm Sunday yet, so we're pretending like we didn't have to skip over it. But the reality is, if we had read it, you'd be going, well, Palm Sunday isn't for 3 weeks. And you're right, it isn't. So we're going to read from some stories that happened after Jesus entered into Jerusalem, and then on Palm Sunday, we'll go back and read about him entering into Jerusalem. Because none of us want to be here every day during Holy Week hearing all these stories. So we've got to get them in this way. So this parable comes after Jesus has entered into Jerusalem on the back of a colt. After he's gone to the temple and found the money changers there changing money. And he's turned the tables over. It comes after the religious authorities in the temple have challenged Jesus and said, by what authority do you think you can come in here to our temple and turn the tables over? And it's to them that Jesus tells this story about a man who plants a vineyard. And he builds a fence around it and a wine press and a watchtower, and then he leases it to some tenants. Now, at the time, this would have been a familiar process or concept. And maybe it even might have been common. But what was not common was the tenants not paying their rent or the tenants not sharing their crop with the landowner. That wouldn't have been common, and it would have caught the hearer's attention. And even more troubling and uncommon would have been how those tenants treated the people that the landowner sent to collect. Did you notice that the landowner not only sent those three servants that we read about specifically, but then we read he sent many other slaves as though they were disposable? We'll just take the next one out of the box. See how this turns out for you. Some got killed, some got beaten, some got ridiculed, until there was one left, we read, his beloved son. It seems to me, after the first few slaves had been beaten and maybe a few of them killed, I might have tried a different tact, but not the landowner. Persistent, we could call him. Persistent. And so he sends his son. We know that they kill his son and they throw him out of the vineyard. So Jesus says the landowner responds by destroying the tenants and giving the land to somebody else. The tenants had killed the landowner's son because they thought in doing so they might actually inherit the vineyard. And in response for having done that, the landowner kills them and he gives it to somebody else. I guess to prove his point, but I don't know that there was anybody there to witness him proving his point. He essentially made somebody else the heirs that they wanted to be. And then Jesus concludes this parable by quoting Psalm 118 about the cornerstone being rejected. And then the religious leaders realize that he had been speaking about them. They, the religious leaders, are the tenants. It's not all of Israel that Jesus is speaking to, as some interpreters have suggested, because in the Old Testament, when we hear a prophet or somebody referring to a vineyard, they are talking about all of Israel. But Jesus wasn't speaking to all of Israel here. Instead, he's speaking to the religious authorities, those who profited from those money changers in the temple. And it wasn't the vineyard, if you think about it. Jesus, or the landowner, didn't turn on the vineyard. He didn't turn on the entire vineyard. He didn't blame the vineyard for the tenants not giving the landowner a share of the crop. He didn't burn down the vineyard. He dealt with the tenants. And if Israel is in fact the vineyard, it's not the vineyard's fault that the tenants didn't give to the landowner what was due. So the tenants to the vineyard, I think, are parallel to the religious authorities to all of Israel. So it's the religious authorities who are held accountable, not all of Israel. It's the tenants who are held accountable, not the vineyard, because the vineyard didn't do anything wrong. This parable, like Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem and his turning of the tables in the temple, made the authorities angry. So they wanted to arrest Jesus, but they were cowards. They were afraid of what the crowds might do. And so they went away. But it wasn't just the crowds that the religious authorities were afraid of. They were afraid of Jesus too. And I think they were afraid of Jesus for the same reasons we are afraid of Jesus. Mr. Justin talked about it in his children's message. Jesus came to bring about change. He came and he challenged the religious authorities' way of life, and he questioned why they should be allowed to keep so much and share so little. You know, they knew that Jesus came with the power to challenge their structures of power and the ways that they held on to their own wealth. Jesus came to change everything. And who resists change? Who resists change? Those people who are benefiting from things that are the way they are now. Why would you resist change if life is good? As it was for the religious authorities. But who embraces change? Those who aren't benefiting from the system the way that it is at the time, like the crowds. So why do the religious authorities fear the crowds? Because the crowds want the change that Jesus is talking about bringing. He had preached and taught and behaved as if he was determined to change their system, to take the power and wealth and authority from those who had it and give it to those who didn't. For Jesus came to turn things upside down, inside out, and around. He came to literally, like he did those tables in the temple, flip everything up on its end. And the religious authorities didn't like it one bit. My friends, God sent God's Son to collect. To collect, not in the way that I collected for the paper. Or not even really, I don't think, in the way that the vineyard owner's son came to collect in this parable. No, the way Jesus came to collect is to offer himself for us in order that we might respond by giving ourselves to him. Jesus came and invited us to give ourselves to him, and that invitation included him giving himself for us. For Jesus comes not to make demands for God, but instead to reveal God and to reveal God's love for us and to us. Jesus came, as we've been reading and reflecting upon during this serving challenge during Lent, he came, as we read from the Christ hymn in Philippians chapter 2, he came with all authority of all the authority of God, and he lowered himself. He allowed himself to take on the form of a man in order that he might become a servant of all. He gave himself for us and then asked that we might do the same in return. Not coming and collecting just a portion of the what the vineyard or the harvest produced, but he came and gave himself for us and invites us to do the same, to give ourselves to him that we too might be used to love and serve and care for others. Jesus came not to exact or to take what was due to God, but he came to invite us to be a part of that vineyard, to be a part of that kingdom that he had come to establish here on earth. And he met resistance. He met resistance like those slaves met resistance, and some died. Think about the prophets in the Old Testament who came and they spoke and they pointed to who Jesus is. Think about John the Baptist, whose very purpose was to point to Jesus. And he died as a result. Jesus came to be among the vineyard, to be among us, to show us what it means to live in a relationship with the vineyard owner who has set everything up for our good in order that we too might share that kingdom and those kingdom resources with him and with others. We read that the cornerstone that had been rejected, or the stone that had been rejected, became the cornerstone. And when we gather for worship each Sunday, we come to worship that very cornerstone, to become a part of the kingdom that Jesus came to establish. It doesn't make sense from a human perspective. You've heard me say that before, and I'm quoting what Jesus himself said in his first passion prediction to Peter. We set our minds on human things, not divine things. But we have gathered here today in the name of the one who gave his life for us, that we might become like him, that we might love in the ways that he loved, and be able to affect a change in the kingdom where we find ourselves residing.